our system is in too many ways broken.
The way we see the world shapes the way that we treat it.
This is Making Contact.
The Claussens are a middle-class family in a small college town, Bloomington, Indiana. Their neighborhood streets wind through soft hills dotted with two-story houses. When we arrived, the family greeted me and my co-producer Emily at the door with smiles. Beth, the matriarch, has kind eyes and short gray hair. Her husband, Nathaniel, was wearing a shirt that said, "Gender-affirming care saves lives." The Claussens' three kids were there too. Izzy is home from college, Max lives at home while he attends Indiana University, and the youngest is 11-year-old Kieran.
I'm Amy.
Beth.
I'm Nathaniel,
I'm guessing. This is Emily.
I came to see them because I wanted to talk about an Indiana law banning medical gender-affirming care for minors. The Claussens, along with the ACLU, some other families, and a family practice doctor, sued Indiana over the law when it was passed. The Claussens' daughter, Kieran, was receiving gender-affirming care, and they were worried about what the law would mean for her. And they were angry. They weren't the only ones. In this clip from one of the bill's hearings, you can faintly hear protesters chanting under State Rep Bradford Barrett's opening remarks.
I would ask people in here to please remain seated, to please limit. I'd like for no signs, banners, or flags. I would like people to please stay seated, and then outbursts of any kind will not be tolerated.
The lawsuit the Claussens brought resulted in an injunction, meaning the law was stopped from going into effect. So at the time of this interview, Kieran was still seeing her healthcare providers in Indiana. But the Claussens knew a ruling could come any day that would force them to seek care out of state. When the bill was first brought, Nathaniel particularly was ready to take action. He knew he was in a privileged position in many ways and felt obligated to take a stand. For one thing, the company he works for supports his advocacy for trans youth. He says in Indiana, that's rare.
I get to speak out, and it's considered one of our caring values. And we really felt like we had to speak up to protect the other families with trans kids that we know about.
The Claussens never expected to be activists or to sue a whole state. Beth admits she really likes when everyone just gets along, and she isn't a fan of change generally. But she and Nathaniel are also devoted parents. Max and Izzy, the older kids, are both cisgender. They're only 18 months apart. And when Izzy and Max were school-aged, Beth and Nathaniel added Kieran to the mix. Max and Izzy said when Kieran was a toddler, she was adorable and loved to be the center of attention. And they were happy to give it. Nathaniel showed me a video of Kieran on his phone. She was 2 years old, wearing a dress-up skirt and dancing. You can hear Izzy laughing in the background.
Hey, Kieran, can you do the hula hula?
Featuring one of the dresses she had stolen from me.
Oh, really? That was yours, the skirt?
It was a dress-up skirt when I was a kid, and then it had been in my room, and as soon as Kieran was old enough to walk, she was like, oh my God, it's pink, and it has a flower on it. And then she stole it.
At two, Kieran dressing in skirts for fun was not an issue for Beth. She thought it was a phase. It was cute and funny. But whether trans, non-binary, or cisgender, many kids have some internal sense of their gender by the time they're 3 years old. And when she was just learning to walk, Kieran often wrapped a towel around her head as if it were long hair and then admired her reflection in the oven door. When she was a little older, Kieran raided Izzy's dress-up clothes and wore them around the house. Eventually, if she wasn't wearing a dress-up outfit, she refused to leave the house. When Beth would try to put boy clothes on Kieran, she would go stiff and not move. A silent but complete boycott. Beth remembers texting her friend, who has a son only 2 years older than Kieran.
When do they get out of this temper tantrum age when they don't want to put their clothes on? And she was like, that never happened with her youngest son. And then I thought about it. I was like, that never really happened with my older two either. Like, this is definitely a new thing.
The conflict sometimes kept them from going out. I asked Beth what that was like for her.
It was a little scary because we started noticing things were a little different. And then she started not being her happy self. She started, you know, withdrawing, and as the tantrums, not tantrums, I hate saying that word because it sounds like she was just being petulant, and that's not what it was. The distress of wearing clothing that she didn't feel describe her. And if you're asking me how it made me feel, it made me feel scared. Not because, I am going to cry. It made me feel scared because I didn't want anything to be hard for her. And I kind of was gathering that things would be scary for me and her and hard. And so I was scared. And I think I felt bad for being scared. I remember specifically I was like, it's not that Kieran wants to wear girl clothes. It's that she just wants to be dressed up. So I started buying button down shirts and corduroy pants so Kieran would look, for lack of a better word, handsome. And then I had a friend say, sorry. I had a friend say Kieran didn't seem like Kieran, like herself, because it was just a day where I put my foot down and I said, we're just going to wear these boy clothes. And they just talked about how Kieran, even at 2.5, or I don't even know how old she was not 3, just like all of the light was out of her. And I was like, oh my gosh, you're right. And then that's when I decided that I can't be scared. We can't be scared. We just had to do the thing that made my kid be the happy kid that she was when all I had to do was let her wear a dress.
Izzy shifted in her seat and raised her hand.
I think that my parents aren't giving themselves enough credit with the amount of research and time they spent looking into it. Because it wasn't them just going, oh, we're going to stick you in these clothes. It was, we can't find a reason for this. It's new and we don't know what it is.
The watershed moment where we realized that we had to do something was Kieran got out of the bathtub and was running around the house and grabbed a pair of scissors and said, can I cut my penis off? I don't like it very much. And I mean, comically, I don't think any boy has ever wanted to cut their penis off. And so we realized right then that she wasn't a boy. And it was at that point that we let her transition
socially.
And what did that look like? What did that mean for you?
So we went to a local shoe store and we bought her some Elsa and Anna shoes, and they were silver and blue. And she was so excited, she slept in them.
After that, they let Kieran shop in the girls' section at stores.
Seeing her smile and seeing her excitement was so powerful because, as Beth said, she had started to get a little depressed. And we said, okay, if she changes her mind later in life, she'll at least know we love her and listen to her.
You're listening to Making Contact,
Just jumping in here to remind you to visit us online if you like today's show or want to leave us a comment. We have more information at radioproject.org. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, welcome back to the show. I'm Amy Gastelum. You're listening to Making Contact. After Beth and Nathaniel Clausen started to support their trans feminine daughter Kieran's social transition, they informed their friends and family first. They told me everybody was pretty accepting and willing to learn. But helping Kieran come out as trans was a process. And pretty soon after they bought the Frozen shoes, Kieran got sick, so Beth took her to a clinic to get checked out. She stumbled over Kieran's pronouns during the visit, and the nurse noticed.
And she called me afterwards. And she was like, I noticed that you were struggling with how to talk about Kieran. And she's like, would you and Kieran like to talk with someone about Kieran's gender? And so I said, absolutely. I didn't know where in Blooming to find that. And it's always meant a lot to me. And I still see her at the grocery store. I don't ever say, remember that time? But yeah, she took the time out of her her own personal time to find my number and call me and reach out with the therapist who she knew would be understanding and affirming. And so we made an appointment with that therapist, and we've seen that therapist off and on ever since.
Kieran's healthcare providers in Bloomington eventually referred her to Riley Children's Hospital in Indianapolis and their gender health program. There, Kieran received wraparound, multidisciplinary, collaborative care from pediatricians, psychologists, and social workers. This is in line with best practice, according to health experts. And while having a supportive mental health and medical team is important, affirmation from other adults in the lives of gender diverse kids is crucial. I asked Kieran what school's been like for her.
School has been great because my school is very acceptive. My preschool was also pretty acceptive, and so was the school that I went to before I transferred.
When it was time for Kieran to start kindergarten, Beth wanted to inform some people at the school that Kieran was trans and would be attending as a girl.
We met with the school social worker. We met with the principal. The social worker had had experience with trans students in the past, so she knew what it meant to, you know, affirm and accept Kieran to school.
The social worker worked with the teachers. She made sure that people understood it was okay for Kieran to share her information if she wanted to. It wasn't a secret, but it was for Kieran and the Clausens to share, not anyone else.
So really, we were set up from the beginning for success.
The American Academy of Pediatrics says the decision of whether and when to start gender affirmative treatment is personal and must consider that each patient and family is unique. They say caring for transgender youth ideally happens on an ongoing basis with the entire care team. There is no prescribed path, sequence, or endpoint to this care, but they recognize the positive impact of affirming treatment and care on gender diverse kids who suffer disproportionately from drug use problems, STIs, and suicidal ideation and attempts. According to the latest data on transgender youth from the CDC's Youth Risk Behavior Survey, just over 1 in 3 trans respondents attempted suicide in the year prior.
Knock, knock. Hi. Hello.
How are you? I'm good. Just up the road from the Clausens, Dr. Maisha Price is studying LGBTQ+ youth, specifically resilience. When I met them at their office at Indiana University, they were just settling in after moving here from California. The office was completely bare.
I literally brought supplies here today.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm accosting you, like before you can even get like settled.
It's fine. It's good.
Dr. Price is an associate professor in the human development program at IU as part of the counseling and ed psych department. And she's also an associate research scientist at the Kinsey Institute.
I share this because it informs the work that I do, but I am Black, queer, and I'm also a solo parent to a 5-year-old who was assigned male at birth, but enjoys wearing skirts, tutus, and has specifically asked me for a Barbie dream house with a slide, to be exact, and is currently navigating which bathroom to use at school. So that's exciting.
Dr. Price confirms LGBTQ plus youth experience poor mental health and suicidality disproportionately. And she's careful to point out the reason why.
So I think a lot of people get a little bit mixed up because they feel as though, well, it's because your queer identity that you're suffering. And ultimately, there's a middle person in there, and that's the way that they're treated. So one of the things we know and that we see over and over again is that it's the discrimination, the stigma, the bullying, the physical harm, the rejection that they're getting that is then causing these poor mental health outcomes that they see. It's internalizing also the negative things that are happening in society. And so now you feel as though you're a bad person because of the identity that you have.
Dr. Price says the impact of bans on gender-affirming medical care, like Indiana's new law, have a sort of underbelly.
The ban itself isn't really impacting that many young people. And I think people would be surprised to hear me say that. But I think there's this assumption that there's like millions of trans young people who are flocking to medical facilities to get gender-affirming care. And I want to back up and talk about what it even is.
Dr. Price says all gender-diverse kids benefit from the social aspects of affirming their gender, things like using preferred pronouns, chosen names, and affirming their use of the bathroom that aligns with their gender. But everybody's different. She says many gender-diverse youth aren't seeking treatment like puberty blockers or hormone replacement in order to affirm their identities. And they might never choose to do that. But the legislation banning care is still harmful to them.
So what we're doing effectively is sending a message to millions of young people, even those who are not ever even interested in getting this care, that they are not worthy of being affirmed. Like, we're essentially saying what we're going to do is pass a law that says your value in our society is lesser than other people's. And so that's one of the conversations we're not having about this is the mental health impact of not only the passing of these bills, but the debate, the very debate of them that's happening.
Beth and Nathaniel decided not to allow Kieran to speak during the law's hearings. The hearings were contentious and they wanted to protect her. I asked Kieran if she'd like to share what she would have said if given the chance, and she did.
I may be a small child, but if you make me mad, I'll make sure your eardrums burst with my screams.
On top of experiencing the discrimination of anti-trans laws, some gender-diverse adolescents suffer when they get closer to puberty that doesn't align with their gender identity. Some kids experience increased isolation and depression. They may have problems with their relationships or academics. In Kieran's case, Beth, Nathaniel, and Kieran's entire care team noticed she was having problems the closer she got to puberty. Kieran's doctor has checked her quarterly for the physical and hormonal changes of puberty. Once puberty starts, an endocrinologist can prescribe puberty blockers, which simply stop it until the kid is ready to think about how to proceed with their development. Depending on the person and the care team, a teen may then eventually receive hormones that match the puberty of their gender identity, estrogen for trans feminine teens and testosterone for trans masculine teens. The hormones are the same that are used for cisgender kids who are experiencing early or precocious puberty. Children and adolescents have used these medications since the 1980s. The hormones are reversible, though there is some data to show that prolonged use poses an increased risk for bone loss in trans feminine kids who receive them. In April 2023, Kieran's doctor placed a puberty-blocking hormone implant in her arm. It's a slow-release device, sort of like a contraceptive implant. It stopped her testosterone-rich puberty so that she would have time to consider receiving estrogen later on.
It didn't hurt, but the numbing shot did hurt, and I turned my mom's hand blue.
Squeezing it.
Yeah.
Kieran says she hasn't loved the visits to her doctor because of the puberty checks.
But it's mandatory, and it's making sure that I don't want to go ka-splat off a building. So, yay.
What do you mean when you say you don't want to go ka-splat off a building?
No comment.
Okay, because I think that what you're talking about is suicide. Is yeah. that right? Okay.
Yeah, I didn't want to say the word because it is a sensitive topic for some people.
It is. You're right. And we're going to be really careful about the way that we talk about it.
The mental health fallout of Kieran not receiving care has worried Nathaniel. His brother died by suicide in 2022.
Puberty sucks for everybody, but to go through a puberty that doesn't align with who you know yourself to be, I don't want my kid taking her life because she has to go through a testosterone-rich puberty.
At the time of this interview, the Claussens were waiting to find out whether Indiana's ban on gender-affirming treatment would go into effect, forcing them to travel out of state for Kieran's care. They were on edge. But here's the thing. What happens to trans kids in conservative states does not rest solely with legislators. Dr. Price says there are things that everyone in every community can do to support them. Things like what Beth's friend did in pointing out Kieran's distress, or what Kieran's nurse practitioner did, what Kieran's school administrators and teachers did. Even Nathaniel's employer supporting his advocacy work is empowering.
What does the literature tell us about proven prevention or protective measures for suicidality among LGBTQ youth? I mean, that's a big question.
Broadly speaking, the protective measures are supportive people, supportive environments. I would say, generally speaking, that's letting people, young people, be who they want to be. And I know that we can do that. We can do that when it comes to music. Well, most of us can do that. When it comes to music, sports, like, we can do that. We can. We can do that when it comes to gender identity and sexual orientation. Like, I promise we can. So let's just bring all that in, right? Like, teachers, coaches, all these people that young people spend time around, if they're affirming and supportive, like, it can literally save lives.
Having safe, supportive schools is a moral imperative.
It is illegal to not be at school. So if we're going to force them to be there, we have to make it safe for them to be there. That's just baseline. So what does affirming schools look like? And again, there's a lot of different ways, but we can think about gender-neutral bathrooms. We can talk about making sure that young people have the option of using their chosen name, pronouns, and things like that are so important. Specifically addressing sexual orientation and gender identity in your bullying policies and being strict about them, not just saying it and moving on. Training staff, all these things are so important when we're talking about how to create a safe environment for young people.
And this includes family functions.
If you're thinking about holidays, you're thinking about things like that, like, would you take your child or the young person in your life to a situation where someone's going to hit them in the head with a bat? No, you would not expose them to something physically harmful, so you shouldn't do it if it's going to be mentally harmful.
A few months after our first visit, I called the Claussens via video chat. Nathaniel and Beth sat down in front of the camera while Kieran danced in a gold skirt in the background. Kieran, you look amazing today. I really like that top.
Thanks.
It's really cute. You look very cute.
Back in February, Nathaniel was driving home from work one evening, and he was just passing the Kroger in Bloomington when a lawyer from the ACLU called him.
I pulled over and they were shaken up. And in listening to them, it shook me up a little bit as well.
The hammer had fallen. The injunction was stayed. The ban was immediately in effect. The law didn't disrupt Kieran's medical care as much as some other kids because her puberty-blocking hormones were administered by an implant. But many adolescents get puberty-blocking hormones as shots.
So, you know, like, families went to bed and they woke up in the morning and their prescriptions couldn't be filled. Or they had doctor's appointments the next day and the doctor's offices had to call and say, you can't come in. Or if you come in, we can't discuss gender-affirming care because this law went in place.
And you know this because you were talking with other families?
Yes. Like,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. The Claussens have decided to go to Boston for Kieran's care. It's not the closest place to get care. Chicago is. But they chose Boston in part because they thought the clinics there might not be as crowded as Chicago, a place that's now a hub for folks from surrounding states with bans.
The law bans gender-affirming care for minors, but it also states that physicians cannot refer their clients out to other providers. So, like, how are people getting this information and resources outside of from their care providers, their physicians?
Do you know?
Yes. A lot of it is word of mouth. Parents reaching out to other parents. There's organizations like Gender Nexus, Protect Our People, Gecko. Another group would be Trans Solutions. They're located in Indianapolis.
Okay. For more information about the organizations connecting people to care and a national resource map, go to our website, radioproject.org, where you can find links in the show notes. Beth and Nathaniel have continued their advocacy work. They say it helps them feel less powerless to help others. The organization Beth helped start, Protect Our People, has been connecting Hoosiers to gender-affirming care outside the state.
We actually were able to help two people this past week get the care that they needed.
She says donations to Protect Our People have increased too.
But I would say the greater population doesn't have any idea what's going on still. Families with trans kids and the trans community in general are kind of are living an alternative reality. You know, Kieran still asks us questions like, wait a minute, I can still get my diabetes care, right? Like we have to remind her or reassure her that it's just this one kind of care.
Kieran, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Would you feel comfortable sharing like how you're feeling right now?
About what?
Just with the changes, now that everything's gone into that the ban has gone into effect in February, like how do you feel about that?
Oh, I don't really care. I'm used to this. I'm used to being hated on.
That sounds hard. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I think she doesn't want to talk about it. She doesn't want to hear about it. Like she's done.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Now the Clausens are turning toward each other and toward Joy. I asked them, besides this law, what's new?
We spontaneously got a new puppy a couple of weeks ago. It was the most impulsive puppy adoption ever.
Impulsive puppy adoption.
And it was totally worth it.
I asked Beth how our listeners could get involved.
Talking to their legislators. They don't have to understand what it means to be transgender or to have a transgender child, but they need to talk to their legislators about how wrong it is for them to be making decisions for people's children. There's doctors for that reason. They are not doctors.
She says another thing anyone can do is support organizations that help trans kids and also speaking up.
And telling people that we are all on the same side. We all love our kids and we all want what's best for them. If we could just get that message across.
Great. Is there anything else you think I should know?
Kieran would like to show you the puppy, if that's okay.
Oh my gosh, yes. Show me the puppy. Oh, she's huge. Oh my gosh.
She's not very cuddly right now.
Yeah, but we named her Socks.
What?
Because her front two paws.
I get it. Very cute. I'm Amy Gastelum. Thanks for listening to Making Contact. Next week, we will continue the conversation with Dr. Maisha Price and get into one factor that may help Black, trans, and non-binary youth, particularly from suicidality. If you or someone you know needs confidential support with suicide prevention, call the free 24/7 national hotline 988. Until next week.